I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Here at Guitar Nerds, we want to make sure you have the best chance to listen to all the guitar content that's right for you. That's why we have a Patreon. Patreon.com/guitar nerds. A veritable treasure trove full of interviews, mini-series, and a whole extra half-an-hour episode every week. Patreon.com/guitar nerds. Get your nerd on. And welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Jay Cross.
Hello.
And Matt Knight.
Hello there.
And this week, it's been the, what do they call it now? The London International Guitar Show. It is still the London International. They change it every now and again. It's not actually in London.
Well,
I don't see how it's in international.
No, me neither. But anyway, it has been a guitar show, so we've got tons to talk about. I didn't actually go because I was on tour, but the two of you did. And Matt Knight, you've been away for a week as well.
Yeah, I was busy.
Yeah.
I wasn't doing anything music related, I was just busy.
Well, wonderful, wonderful answer. Well, you have been doing some musical things, because you've continued your delay pedal quest that you've been on of late.
I sold a bunch of stuff, which meant, you know, I can pay off bills or I can just buy more stuff. So I've been on a bit of a delay pedal quest.
And specifically an electroharmonics delay pedal quest.
Well, actually, no. I've actually decided that it is just a delay pedal quest. I saw a post from, I think, Blake a couple of weeks ago, maybe a week ago, and he was like, oh,
Blake really Weiland from the Tone Mob.
And he was like, oh, I really like fuzz pedals. And he had a picture of all these fuzz pedals, and it's a whole load of fuzz pedals. And I was like, I've actually got more delay pedals than any other type of pedal. And there's probably more delay pedals that I like overall in the entire time that I've been playing guitar. So there's a couple that always, you know, pop up regularly, and I'm like, no, I'll get one day. And then over the weekend, I actually managed to buy, well, one just before the weekend, one at the weekend, two pedals I've actually been looking for, and a couple that we've mentioned on the podcast before. One of them, I managed to pick up a Ibanez DE7, finally, see what the hype is about, and I only paid £44 for it, which is about half the price they seem to be going for every now and then. Which
you paid
is
£44 for the Echo Shifter, right?
No, for the Ibanez DE7.
Oh, okay.
Which is seven. And then I also bought an Ibanez ES2 Echo Shifter, which I only paid £70 for.
Oh, how much?
Ibanez 70. I think about it paid £70 for, yeah.
Bloody hell.
Which is cheap. They're really hard to get hold of. And when they do go for a lot of money. So for people who are unaware, obviously most people probably know the DE7. The ES2, which we've talked about a lot, was a short-lived Ibanez analog delay pedal that came out in 2014. Kind of wedge shaped, looks a bit like one of those Moog pedals, with a giant slider on the front for delay time. It's also got a tap tempo, a modulation switch which is fixed. You can't, there is a depth control which sort of shows how wobbly the repeats go. Feedback, mix, and then an oscillation button.
Separate switch.
Yeah, it's a separate switch. Just automatically puts it into oscillation. But I like the fact that delay time's on the slider, because you can do, if you set the delay time really quick with the tap tempo, and then push the slider all the way up, it slows down in such a wicked way.
Oh, it's fantastic! It's one of the most musical delay pedals. If you want to
100%.
If you want to make soundscapey things, I think having it on a slider rather than a rotary is just incredibly usable. I used it a lot when I was doing some videos for GAK. We were trying to make like movie theme tunes and things like that, and it was always like space movies and stuff like that. And I found that Echo Shifter was just perfect for that, because you can just use it for so many weird modulation-y things. And that mod button is kind of the same. Like, it's not uncommon to just have modulation dealt with as a switch, because like even the carbon copy is just an on-off situation with the modulation.
Yeah, it's quite a wild modulation, though. But I'm just wondering, like, I'm really interested, just like AB all my sort of delay pedals, but I've got so many really nice ones.
Find out what the best one is.
I know, but then it's like, which one do I put on the pedal board? And you know, if one's not being used, I feel sad that it's sort of being left out. So maybe I need to really have a nice way of putting them all on display, or having them just all stacked up somewhere rather than just like in a box under the bed, which is some of the only space I've got. Because it's nice to just have them in like drawers, so you can just go, I just want to use that, rather than like have to try and dig it out from somewhere. And then the other day, I totally forgot that I've got a flight case full of Dan Electro pedals that have sat in my wardrobe for ages. But there's a couple of Wicked pedals in there, and I'm like, don't get these out often enough. But if they're in like an easy to reach drawer, then I could plug them in.
You need to have a setup like at the opticians. I realise that as a glasses wearer, I maybe am more familiar with this than you guys are. But when I go to the opticians, they have these drawers that pull out, and all the glasses are just laid out there in front of you. And then you close it up and then open it. That's what you need, except for what you need is actually for all the pedals to be wired up together. Yeah. So it sounds like a bit of a big job, but...
What was the name of the spinning speaker in the Dan Electro Food series? Do you remember? Was it Hash Brown?
No, the Rocky Road.
Rocky Road. Yeah, that was great. That one always, especially for me, was
later known
awesome.
As... what's the one called in the...
The Billionaire. It's the
Big Spender.
Big Spender spinning speaker.
It's got to be the same circuit, surely.
For sure, for sure. But the DE7 as well, one of the... I've never liked that range of Ibanez pedals. They look really ugly.
Do you know what? They're actually one of the more practical pedals that I think ever came out.
Well, yeah, because they're an imitation of
a Boss pedal, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
but I actually like the kind of the way that knobs work. So you can click them in, and you
can lock the knobs so they don't. I agree. Every time I get my pedal board out of my case before a sound check or a gig, you have to check each one of them to make sure nothing's. You know, nothing's moved.
Which is only really the problem for someone who actually gigs, because, you know, most of us who never gig are like, don't touch the controls, mate.
Yeah, fine.
I'm just looking at it. but I'm actually really interested, because I've got a DD5 now and a JHS Pink Panther, which is, it's paying homage to the DD5 and the DE7. So it'll be really interesting to see, like... put those three together. So I think I've got like a nice range of pedals that could potentially make some cool videos at some point.
Well, we've got a lot of other stuff at mine as well, because I've got the Ibanez AD9, we've got the JHS Panther Cub, we've got the new Ibanez delay, I've got the Carbon Copy and the Carbon Copy Bright, and then we've got...
What's the new Ibanez delay?
The new one?
Yeah.
As in the mini one, they do a mini tiny version.
The AD9 mini.
It's the AD9 mini, yeah. But that, okay. I don't think they call it that. They just call it the delay. But then we've also got things like we've got
not that
like
new though, is it? Joe?
No, I guess newish. We've got the Casper delay. Who was that by? We spoke about them last week.
Cast Engineering.
And then we've got the Seymour Duncan Vapor Trails.
Great pedal.
Yeah, sort of.
Of course, we've got the Boss Space Echo. Well, I've got the DM2W as well, the Boss DM2W here.
Actually, you know what? It's really interesting when I was sort of putting together some pedal boards and I was ABing some stuff, and I had the Panther Cub and the DM2 and then both of the Electro-Harmonics memory mans that I have, and it was actually really nice, because they had obvious similarities, but they were all had a very nice sort of quality in their own way. But the DM2, I sort of always forget how wicked that DM2 sounds in the custom mode because you get all the extra delay
time. Let's be very clear. The custom mode is not usable. It's very fun.
It feeds back immediately,
no matter what you do. But it's incredibly usable if you want to, again, for the same thing as the Echo Shifter, if you want to sort of take those delay tails and move them around, it's great for that.
But you know, there's some trim pots inside that you can adjust, and if you adjust them, you break the pedal, so don't touch those trim pots.
Right, I'll bear that in mind. I've got the Flashback 2, the Canyon as well. Oh, and the Ernie Ball expression delay.
Oh, yeah.
The expression delay, for me, I always think sounds really good, but I just wish... Because the expression control itself is just the level of the delay. And I was like, oh, why isn't it like the delay time and feedback sort of together? That seems to be obviously what you'd assign to an expression. Certainly on something like a Helix or even on a Boss MS3, if you're using an external expression pedal and you wanted to manipulate delays, those would be the two things you'd assign to the expression to be able to manipulate it. So it seems weird that they've gone for level, because I see no reason that you'd either have it on or off. You know,
yeah,
it doesn't
know.
Seem
Maybe
like
it's like a solo thing. You just like lean forward and
yeah. I mean, I love it on all the other Ernie Ball ones on the drive, because it maintains your clean signal underneath no matter what level you have, and you're just bringing in the level of drive alongside it, which is very usable, very practical. And of course, the one that they nailed is the tremolo reverb.
Yeah, that's
because
what that is cool.
Because you control rate and depth of the tremolo whilst bringing in the reverb underneath. That's like, that is soundscape in a pedal.
Mm.
But yeah.
What pedal is that, sorry?
That's the new purple Ernie Ball expression tremolo.
Yeah.
But it's fantastic. What a wicked pedal.
I think I talked about this before, but I was really disappointed when I tried that, because I tried it at NAMM and it sounded as though I was plugging my headphones, because they only had headphones you can plug into an amp, which was, you know, obviously you're at a trade show, it makes complete sense, but it sounded as though the headphones were plugged directly into the pedal. It sounded like it just, I don't know what they were using, some sort of weird sort of headphone amp or something, but I was really disappointed because it really didn't show the pedals off in a very good light. And then since, I've tried them at your house, Joe, and they sounded fantastic.
I
feel like they maybe shot themselves in the foot a little bit by not really showing off the pedals as well as they should have, as well as they could have done.
Again, it highlights the fact that never try anything at a guitar show.
Well, completely, and obviously, I wasn't gonna judge the quality of the pedal.
I think, I've been talking to a few people about this kind of recently, obviously, with us going to the show this weekend, and 2019 is 10 weeks away. And that means that NAMM is around the corner. And I was just like, the more NAMM goes on, the more I'm like, it is basically like a media event, but people just go there to get like the story. They don't really want to hear the stuff, because most people are like, I'll order it now when all the stores have got it online, and then, we'll just wait till then.
I think you're right to an extent. I think some stuff works better than others. I think... Me and Jay were last week talking about the Game Changer Plus pedal, and of course that at the time that came out, not this year but the year before, they were a tiny company and they had no videos and no marketing behind them, and it was because it was a very simple setup, obviously, but it was easy to hear the quality and usability of that pedal.
Yeah.
Whereas, I think you can nail it. You can get it right. I think it becomes a problem if you release too much stuff. I think some brands can release too much stuff at NAMM, and it depends what sort of setup you go for. I agree. I don't think headphone amps are ever going to work. But when you're someone like, the problem for Ernie Ball is their NAMM setup is they have a stage area where they have talks and showcases. They get famous musicians up. They get the Ball family up to talk about the gear. So they kind of have a very sort of press releasey feel to it there, but they also have areas in that place where you can go and play. So of course they don't want to fill that area with people playing stuff whilst you know, well, Scott Ball's trying to tell you about the new amps. And at the same time, within that same space, they also have these little booths that all the dealers can go and sit down with the sales element of Ernie Ball and sort of negotiate deals with them.
The correct term is closing rooms.
Oh, right.
Closing rooms, yeah. That's the technical lingo for, right. for
I
us.
I can't believe
us
that
in
we're going to be talking about it properly in, like, you know, just over a couple months.
What, NAMM?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not that far away.
I guess this kind of segues into us talking a little bit about the guitar, about the London International Guitar Show this weekend. But
yes.
Basically, every conversation I had with people there was, "Oh, so how's it going? How's it going? Yeah, yeah, going good, going good. How are things with you? Yeah, yeah, going good. Oh, wow. I can't believe it's been a year since I saw you. I know. What's going on this year?" And I'm like, "Oh, don't know. Loads, I guess." But it's just every conversation was, "I can't believe it's NAMM around the corner." Basically, the year has gone so fast. It's been a pretty exciting time for us all, I think.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It's been a big year for releases. I think after what was maybe a couple of muted years of NAMM, last year was so fantastic that I think everyone's really excited for the next one. So, it will be interesting. But let's talk about the London International Guitar Show, a very, very different show from NAMM. For US listeners, I don't know if you'll be able to comprehend the sort of the downscaling level or sort of... I mean, what we're talking about here is a hall with a load of trestle tables in it and some
guitars.
Well,
yeah,
on it.
But it's only like a local guitar show would be. To,
of course,
yeah, people will be able to understand. You know, there's probably 100 to 150 to 200. I'm not sure exactly. Companies there, each with a couple of tables, and they've got stuff out. And it's, you know, some of them are shops. So there was a couple of shops there. So PMT were there, for example. They were there with new stuff. There was a bunch of secondhand shops and smaller companies. And there was a couple of the guitar auction houses were there as well. And then there was also some larger companies. But mainly it was smaller independent companies. So, yeah. You know,
Tate Effects had a stand there.
Stuart Tate was there, of course. Yeah.
But if you could enter his giveaway, couldn't you, at the guitar show? Is that right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
he's
giving
away a limited edition green,
Raise the Dead.
Yeah. Raise the Dead.
Actually, it's a limited edition that's actually being sold exclusively through Reverb. I think they do it. It's to 125 pieces, if I remember rightly. And I did get all the details off him in a message a little while ago, but I think it's slightly different components. Obviously, all handmade by him, limited edition casing, available exclusively through Reverb. £125, if I remember rightly. But yeah, you could win one while you were there, which was a pointless competition because we know he's just going to give it to us. So
we've actually already got one. We have a Raise the Dead.
Oh yeah, no,
we have one
mean
of the first.
You've
gen
got one.
Raise
and
the Dead.
Didn't ever tell us.
Oh yeah, maybe yourself. that's possibly the answer there. It's with my fuzz collection.
Yeah, but do you know what I like about this show compared to? Because I like the Birmingham one, but the Birmingham one is probably a little bit more commercial, maybe. I don't know. There's a vibe to this one that I kind of like. I mean, there's more vintage. It feels like there's more stuff to buy at this one, and that's always the thing with NAMM. You walk around, you see all this cool stuff, and you're like, really want to buy a bunch of this. And I know half of it's probably not going to come out for 3 months, and the other half might never come out or come out like a year later.
Yeah.
And it's nice to walk around this one because there's a whole bunch of stuff for sale. And if you're super rich, then there's a whole bunch of wicked expensive vintage stuff you can buy. And if you're just after a bargain or you just need parts, you know, then we walked past Charlie Chandler's Guitar Experience and they had just like parts bins that you could buy loads of pickups or pickup covers, and then the occasional really pedal cool. and stuff. And then they also had a full tone tube tape echo, and I was like, oh, I really want that. I just didn't have enough money. But it was that's what I like about the show, is that you can pick stuff like that up. And there's a lot of bargaining going on, and it kind of
it's
feels
definitely
like
the place to sort of walk around with it, you know, if you can, like sell some gear before the show and walk around there with a couple of grand in your pocket, because there will be something super rare. There will be something there that you'll never see again that you've always wanted.
I think the one thing that we don't have, before we just go into a little bit more detail of the show, is we don't have like a UK-based swap meet for guitar stuff like they tend to have in the US. Do you know what I mean? Where people like literally set a table and they're just like, they're not even like a dealer, they've just got stuff to sell. People go and like swap a bunch of stuff. There's no like car boot sale of guitar things, which is something I'd quite like to see. Which,
but
there
I think
always a risk with that, because you don't know what you're buying, maybe. But sometimes it's just cool to not see the same secondhand stuff pop up in stores or, you know, whatever. Or not.
Yeah, no, I think that what you're, where it differs from the US to the UK is that we're a much smaller place here. And so I think a lot of that stuff just happens on the internet, because it is much easier for people to, you know, there's Gumtree, there's Reverb. And if it says it's the UK, you know, realistically, you're probably within a reasonable drive, or postage isn't going to be crazy. Whereas if you're in the US, then these things need to be a bit more centralized and a bit more IRL, because you just, the internet's massive because the country's massive. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. But otherwise, I actually really like it. I think it's a great show. We made a list of a bunch of stuff that we saw, like old stuff that was there, because this is the one thing, you don't really see any vintage gear at the one in Birmingham, right? It is mainly shops, or it's distributors slash
I mean, the thing is with the London International Guitar Show is it's run by the company Northern Guitar Shows, and I think they've been around for a long time, and it's just because they're quite established and they've got a bunch of these shows. I get the impression that a lot of the people that exhibit in London probably also do, you know, Liverpool and do the Northern, do like Newcastle, and so there are people there that do just kind of travel around, and they're probably trading stuff on the go in order to keep it all going.
Yeah.
So that's why I think something like the Birmingham Guitar Show, which is maybe a little bit more of a slightly more modern show than the London International Guitar Show, or like the Northern Guitar Show's show. But yeah, no, I had a really good time. We saw some really cool stuff, I thought.
Yeah, and let's talk about that. Let's talk about some of your favourite bits then from the show.
Okay, well, I'm going to put out my guitar highlight, I would say. I always like looking at 54 Les Pauls, like the proper ones with the, I forget what you call the pickup in the neck, but they're like the massive chunky ones that like look like a P90 but aren't really a P90. Or any of those kind of early to mid 1950s black Les Paul customs or anything like that. But there was one that really caught my eye, and it was a 1957 black Les Paul custom Switchmaster, which I've never ever seen before. So the Switchmasters were originally part of, I think, the L5 is where it's originated. It's basically, rather than a three-way toggle switch, they have a five-way slider switch, a bit like you'd find on a Fender, on like a Strat. So this had three pickups. So normally you'd expect a three-way selector switch would give you neck, middle, and bridge. So this one had a five-way selector that gives you various combinations of the three humbuckers, but then each humbucker has its own volume and tone. So it's got this massive five-way switch on it, and three volumes and three tones, as well as having three humbuckers. And it was all original, apart from the machine heads, which had been changed to Grovers. Black with gold hardware, looks beautiful, really well played in, never had a neck break or anything like that. And it was a cool £75,000, because I went on Blimey. The shop later to find it. And yeah, £75,000.
Was it a five-way switch? I thought it was just a four-way switch.
No, I think it's a five-way.
See, I can't remember, but I had it in my head that it was a four-way switch, and it was pickup one, pickup two, pickup three, or all three pickups. I'm sure I'm just double checking.
I'm going to put up the thing. You might be right. I thought it was a five-way.
The picture.
Oh yeah,
I found
you're right. One, two, three, and all.
Yeah.
Either way, wicked.
It was really cool. It was really cool.
But it's the having the. So the first four pots are in the same place that you'd normally find a Les Paul, and then the other two are behind the top E and B strings, continuing
it's
that
so
same
weird.
Sort of
it's,
diagonal line. I've never ever
like
seen one before.
It looks like a sort of a mod. It doesn't look like something that should have come out of the show. It looks like the sort of thing that was occurring in the 80s. When people were trying to add sort of parametric.
You're completely right. That absolutely is what it looks like. It really does look like someone's bought this guitar and they're like, oh yeah, I just picked this guitar. I picked up this 1957 Les Paul just for like a couple of hundred quid. And I mean, it's not really worth anything. So I'm just going to stick this weird 10-way selector switch. But I've got to drill through the entire body in order to do that. Yeah, it'll be all right, won't it?
And it came with the original case.
Wow, that's awesome.
Well.
It's probably stank.
I don't think 75 G's isn't too bad for that. For
all right, money
that.
Bags. I didn't realise life was so good at GAC.
I think the thing is ultimately the Les Pauls that are worth the most money are 58, 59, 60. And then you get into the kind of customs, and the customs are worth a bit. If they're a bit quirky, like this one is, they definitely didn't make that many. They're going to be worth a considerable amount more. And then you've got like 52s and 54s, but they're never like 59 money. And I think it's just the artists and the hype and everything that's associated with a 59 that puts that crazy price tag on. But I think even now, I was talking to someone the other day, and he knows someone who deals in that kind of... I think he said he owns a store in London that deal a lot in vintage guitars. And he's like... In the UK, at any one time, there's about 659 Les Pauls that are basically just doing the rounds between various collectors.
Yeah.
And they kind of just set the price, really. And no one's really making any money. You know, someone's basically selling it for what they paid for it, and it just sort of goes round in circles for a bit until it gets sold outside, or someone buys a new one in from outside of that circle. And I think that's where you tend to find a lot of this vintage gear is... people who know other people, and it just all does the same circuit, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so.
But that was very, very cool. And a shop, a different guitar, a vintage guitar shop I'd never heard of, had a 59 black ES335, which looked absolutely amazing. That was like factory finished ES335. And if I remember rightly, I've got a picture here. I'm not sure if I can read it. Gibson 59 335 mono output with the block inlays, and I'm pretty sure it said it was the first one ever to be recorded in that custom color or something. It was something along those lines, like absolutely nuts. Wow. I didn't get the name of the company. Oh, ATB Guitars, that was it.
No, I've not heard of them either. And what sort of price tag is a 1959 first black ever Gibson ES335?
I'm going to see if I can find it. 59 ES335 TD factory mono stop tail. It's 16,000. So not as less than 20 of these were made in the first year, 1959, when ES355.
So like a Les Paul custom
mono
type.
Yes, yeah, so it's got the block inlays with the triple binding. So, yeah, 20, less than 20 were ever made in 59 in black. No varitone, mono output. And it's been fully restored. A little bit more of a story opening up now on it. They all came in cherry red, but only 20 were ever made of that particular model. Someone sprayed it sunburst, and then it went to a company called Historic Makeovers, who then refinished it in black.
Right, which is so, why it's $16,000 looks, and not $100,000 or something, you know?
Yes, yeah.
I wouldn't have been that much.
I'll tell you what, the original 59 PAFs, and they would have been the same PAFs in that they would have put in a 59 Les Paul, comes with original 59 case, but not the original case that it would have come with. I tell you what, that is wicked. And they reckon that the usual price for those is $50,000. So all of the work has almost knocked it down. So I tell you what, I would, as a three, as a like a 335 style guitar, that is just absolutely beautiful.
You thinking
stuff
about
like that, they need to do custom shop versions of.
You thinking about popping down the bank and remortgaging, Matty?
Oh, if only. I tell you what, it's one of those things that we did talk about it a bit, didn't we, Jay, about vintage guitars, and it's like, would you spend that money or would you rather buy just a modern guitar? A vintage guitar is probably going to hold its value, but then you're going to be like, do I really want to play it all the time?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a
just
weird one.
Just buy a Strandberg, mate. Just buy a Strandberg.
Yeah, just cut the headstock off this one. Do you know, it'd be one of those ridiculous things, wouldn't it? If you just had so much money and you just walked in and went, yeah, I just really want a headless guitar, but I just love 355s, and I've really been looking for a 59 first production year one.
I was born in 1959, and this is what I want.
But I was a child of the 80s, a 30-year-old child of the 80s. So what I really wanted was a headless guitar. But yeah, ATB guitars, not heard of them, but they've got a bunch of... Jay, were they the stand that had the complete collection of like 51, 52
no,
blonde...
No, they weren't. No, it was a different company, I think. But that we saw those as well, and there were some really funny, very early Fenders there. So as Matt said, there was a 51... no, it wasn't a 51, it was a 52 Tele... a 53 Esquire, a 53 Tele, I think, as well. And then
another 53 T.
And then a 51 P bass or a 52 P. Oh, no, 51, 52, 53 P bass as well. I can't remember which one it was. But we were looking at it. Yeah. I mean, some of the stuff on that, and they were just all in a line there. You know, they were, it was, it was crazy. It was crazy. But, we were looking at it, and I tell you what, the Esquire, the 53 Esquire, was a proper fast Friday afternoon job.
Yeah, like, it looked so weird.
It was so bad. Like, there was definitely, was it the 53? Maybe it was the 52. It was one of the early ones anyway. And it was, oh my gosh, it looked awful. It looked so bad. Like, it looked like someone had drawn a telly and then... You know Homer's car in The Simpsons, where it's like
the Homer.
It was kind of like that, but a Telecaster. Like, the color wasn't quite right. The contouring of the body wasn't quite right. The pick card looked as though it had been screwed in a bit too tight. Like, it was absolutely 4 o'clock on a Friday afternoon, and someone's gone, I've got to get this finished. I've got to get it finished. Leo's going to go mad if I don't get it finished. Or maybe it was Leo himself. You know, who knows? It just being like, I just want to get down the pub. Come on, let's get this done. But it's just really funny how, you know, these instruments that are so well revered are, they're individuals. Let's put it that way.
That was the funny thing, really. And, you know, Fender at the time was, you know, and we've always talked about it. Most people know the story that Fenders were designed as that modular instrument, which, you know, workhorses that if you needed to change something, you could unbolt everything, where Gibsons were like the high-specced mega guitar of the day, you know. And that's why you tend to see that the oldest Gibson stuff looks, I say, better built, but the Fender stuff is a bit like, which the Tele was just a slab of wood. Do you know what I mean? They just drew the design and put it in a machine and just gone, cool, just about the next to that. It's good to go.
No, they weren't putting it in a machine. They were, you know, it was kind of, cutting them themselves.
No, it's on a bandsaw. Though,
yeah,
isn't it?
Sure,
that's what I mean
sure.
By a machine, it's on a bandsaw.
But they weren't there with
an actual saw.
I don't think
cutting it off.
I don't think necessarily they were designed to be workhorse guitars that you could take apart. I think Leo just saw that it was an easy way to make a guitar. I don't think it was, I don't think they were made bolt-on for functional purposes. I think they were made bolt-on for logistical purposes. That's why that's why the guitars evolved as they did, because he saw it was an easy way to make a guitar.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!"
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So,
yeah, probably the case. Sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to say another couple of bits that I saw at the show that I really liked. We got to hang out with Zilla for a bit, Zilla Cabs. Yeah. Matt, you'll have to forgive me. I can't remember the Paul.
I've kind of known Paul, I guess, for about 10 years, ever since he built my first Zilla Cab, but we've never ever met, and we've only ever spoken on the phone a few times. It's usually just over email, but he's built various cabs for me over the years, and then I sort of went over and he handed me a leaflet and I went, yeah, I sort of really know about these, you've been making cabs for me for years. And he went, what's your name? And I was like, oh, it's Matt. And I said, I've ordered these pink ones, and he could remember basically every cab.
It was really funny. He just reeled them all off. It was really cool.
And it was really good to just see him there. But the great thing, and I've seen this pop up on their Instagram, for people who use Kemper...
Yeah, this is what I was going to talk about. Yeah.
They've actually made shells that look like Tolexed shells for Kempers, for the toaster Kempers.
Yeah.
So they
so
look
good.
Like real amp heads, as they... But I just thought, genius.
Yeah, it looked amazing, and the chassis of the shell follows the curvature of the head itself. So you know how, Joe, you know how the Kempers kind of from the top they go down vertically and then they kind of jut out at a very slight angle. Well, the head shells that Zilla are making do exactly that as well.
Oh, and that is awesome.
The contouring on it looked so nice. It was a really, really well put together head, and I don't know anybody else is doing it. And as soon as we got to that stand, that was the thing that caught my eye. I thought that was a really, really smart, smart product that they've brought out there.
Mm. Yeah, fantastic. Zilla cabs have always been fantastic, hence why, you know, Matt, obviously you get everything made by
I wouldn't ever have another cab, I don't think.
How many cabs do you think you've had built by Zilla for yourself over the years?
I don't know, probably in
since I've known you, it's at least 5.
I mean, I must have had nearly 10.
For someone who doesn't play gigs, that's a lot of cabinets.
Yeah, it's like redecorating your house, you know. Eventually you've got to go, I just need something new. But he's also built things like I had an old American Pro Junior, which I was like, want a bigger cab, want a bigger speaker, rather than the 10-inch speaker, and he built like a oversized cab for it to give it like more bottom end, because obviously it can sound a little bit weedy. So he's done stuff like that before. He's always great doing custom stuff. He's always got a great selection of like Tolexes, and he just does a really pro job. And he also, it was the GAC 25th anniversary, and we did those katanas, he did that as well. So
he made up some red and yellow striped boss katanas, which were super cool. So on to sort of more modern guitar brands. Who did you see there who were, you know, really good?
In terms of actual guitars, well, we did speak to Matt at Fidelity a bit, and he had a prototype of a model that he's working on with another guitar manufacturer.
Yeah, it was a luthier that was relatively local to him, that was a little bit different from the Fidelity.
Oh, really? So is this a new body shape? Because, of course, that's the thing with Fidelity. There is some variance, but it's roughly...
Yeah, so
shape.
it was a new body shape. So it was a single cut body design.
Ooh.
And a new neck shape as well. Like I think the words that he used to describe it was a bit less esoteric, I think was what he said. Because you know the Fidelity necks have really got that kind of I don't know. They're very esoteric, I guess is a really good way of putting it. You know, they are what they are, and this is just a little bit more traditional, I guess. But yeah, it was a prototype. It was very cool, very nice, super light. It didn't weigh anything at all. It was bonkers, it felt really cool. Another couple of things that he had on the go was he has hooked up with a couple of artists, so he has made...
That's right, he's done a couple of signature
models.
Yeah,
he's made a signature model for the guitar player from The Horrors, and he's also made a signature model for Public
Service Broadcasting, yeah, who are not, a fantastic band.
I always get confused between them and Public Image Limited, which was right. Johnny Rotten's band that he did after the Sex Pistols. It wasn't them. Really cool. Really cool to see Matt. Really cool to see what he's got going on, and things keep going from strength to strength. And we could tell that we were getting closer to the Fidelity stand because more and more Fidelity guitars kept appearing on other people's stands the closer that you got to the Fidelity stand. So he'd obviously just got a few more bits and pieces and had just like, right, who... Oh, Xander, yeah, you probably need a couple of... How about you take this, mate? And, you know, it was just really funny. Like, we were being drawn into the event horizon.
Yeah, I remember, I think it was last year when I went with you guys to the London International Guitar Show, and I can't remember what happened. I was either horrendously hungover or I was giving up alcohol for a week or something like that. And Matt had brought a can of gin and tonic to help me through the
show. Yeah. he's so nice. He's so nice.
It's great.
So yeah, really, really cool to see him. And he was just in kind of this this cluster of other exhibitors who, you know, we were kind of mates with. So he was right next to Rich from Alder and Ash Pedal Boards. And it was actually the first time that I've seen those boards up in the flesh. And
they
really are amazing. And it's really funny. So Matty and I were walking around together, and it's really funny talking to Rich because I worked with Rich at GAC, but I forgot that he started after Matt left. And so right. Matt only really knew him through Alder and Ash, and I knew him better through GAC. It was really cool to see that. But those boards that he's got are just really, really something. Mm. Really, really like beautiful craftsmanship. he'll make you basically whatever you want. I also thought the lids were really nice. Just the whole construction of it was amazing. You know, they aren't cheap, but
you say that. I actually think you can get that. I think they are very comparable to a lot of mainstream ones.
Absolutely. I mean, I guess the way I look at it is, you know, I think a lot of people would think, okay, well, why would I buy this over a Stag UPC 424? And, you know, that is obviously not what Rich is doing here, but it's boutique pedal boards in the way that, you know, yeah, sure, you can buy a drive pedal for 40 quid if you want to buy a drive pedal for 40 quid, but wouldn't you rather have a Analog Man King of Tone? You know, that's what he's doing there, is it's premium and it's quality and there's a lot of bespoke fittings in there. So really, really cool stuff from him. And also in that kind of cluster, there was Thorpey. So we got to chat to Adrian for a bit, and he's got a new pedal coming out that you were really excited about, Matty.
Oh yeah, so, well, obviously the Dane, which is what everyone knows about, what we were mainly talking about, which I can't remember if we talked about when we were talking about the London show at the Olympia, was obviously he's got all the mini pedals coming out, which are basically the same circuit as the other ones. They just don't take a battery. And I was like, what I really like is, I was saying that you've established your look and your brand with those bigger ones, but most people were like, they are a bit chunky. They're not actually any wider. They're just long. And people obviously, you know, precious about their space. And these ones, there was something about the smaller, the format that just looked better.
Yeah, you know, I agree.
A conversation about mini pedals. And most people are like, well, yeah, you just got to have a pedal. You can have a pedal board of mini pedals and shrink your pedal board right down. And I was like, yeah, but the size of your foot is still the size of your foot. You know, it's like, if your foot is wider than the mini pedal, what's the point in putting two mini pedals really close together? And that's actually what I really liked about the Dane, because I got to see it up close properly for the first time. And he's actually properly spaced out the foot switches that you can actually step on either button easily. But if you really wanted to, you could probably step on both at the same time. But not, because that's, you know, we mentioned earlier about the JHS pedals, and it's great that the Pink Panther's got an on-off and a tap tempo, but so many times I'm like really delicately trying to hit the tap tempo without turning the thing off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And that's what I liked about those designs. I think everything he does is just so well thought out, and just so nice. And there are basically, I think, a two or three man teams. He's saying his wife is a better pedal builder than him.
Yeah, that's what he was saying, is that, you know, he sometimes has conversations with people, which is like, okay, well, you know, now that you've expanded a bit and you've got a couple of other people working for you, how can I make sure that I'm getting a pedal made by you? And he was like, you don't want a pedal made by me. You want a pedal made by my wife. She's much better than I am.
Well, that's what I was saying, because he was saying he was going to train someone else up. And I was like, oh, so the pre-Adrian Thorpey only built Thorpey pedals are the ones worth getting then.
And he was like, no, not in the slightest. So that was really cool. Who else? Oh, I tell you what was really cool. Hampstead was there. Peter Hampstead himself was there. The man behind the name. So that was really nice to get to have a chat with him and with their sort of small family crew, which was really cool. And they have got a it's not a new pedal, actually, the Odyssey. It's not new, but it was new to me. I didn't realize that they did a pedal. I don't know if you carry it in the shop, Joe.
We actually have one.
Oh, Guitar Nerds has one.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's right. Very okay. Good. It's a really good pedal.
Yeah, the Odyssey. Yeah,
I spoke to James there, and he sent one over to us. I think we've put out some stuff on the Instagram for it. But yeah, I think maybe we spoke about it when it came out, but we haven't really spoken about it since then.
Yeah, it was it was really fantastic. Cool. And I tell you what was really interesting about how they had it set up, what I really liked was they had, I can't remember which model it was in particular, but it was one of the Gig Rig switches. And they had maybe five of the Odysseys set up on a board in front of you, and above each of the switches they had a different kind of descriptor of how they had the pedal set up to show the wide range sounds it could do. So they had like classic rock, like heavy metal, clean boost, transparent blues or something like that. And they had, so rather than someone having to go through and be like, okay, well, what can this do? I'll turn this. And you know, all of a sudden you're just turning the gain up and then it's way too loud to hear anything. They had everything all set up there. And they also had, what's the Empress delay? The super delay. Is that the white one with the yellow stripes? Is that one?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
they had that there, so you could have a bit of delay, and they had another couple of pedals there just to sort of complement the sound. But I thought that was a really, really smart for a company that have only got the one pedal. I thought that was a really good way of showing off the range of
absolutely.
Sound.
Absolutely, build quality on those pedals is absolutely fantastic. They remind me of the. Who makes the Calibre the compressors? Who am I thinking of? UK company makes the compressors.
Origin Effects.
Yeah, right. It reminds me of that in the sort of like a heavy as a brick could kill a man if thrown sort of pedal.
And Joe, perhaps something that you would find interesting is they had a prototype of the bass version. That they will be releasing, which I can't remember. It was called something like the Sub Odyssey or Subsidy, maybe it wasn't. Subsidy would be a really great name to go alongside Odyssey, but I don't think that's what it was. But it was something like that. And yeah, they had, it was basically a bass version, and my shonky guitar playing made it difficult. They were very patient with my terrible guitar playing, talking me through everything. But yeah, it sounded really cool, really, really good. So really excited to see what goes on there. And I was sort of probing, asking for questions. Oh, because the other thing they had was they had a reverb, which was the reverb circuit from one of their amps. Is that what they were saying? I think, or tremolo? I can't remember. I was so overwhelmed with everything that was going on. But they were hinting that there is more stuff to come next year. They wouldn't give any amazing specifics, but yeah, very, very, very cool. Very exciting.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Oh, we should probably also give a shout out. I know we already mentioned him once, but we only talked about the limited edition pedal. Tate Effect Stewart actually had a brand new overdrive pedal there, which I tried for a bit, which was wicked. The Antares Drive, I think that's how you pronounce it, which is his. I think it started life as the BMB drive, which is the one that he built for Mikey from Skin Dread, but it's got a clean blend on it as well, which I really liked. So I was cranking the volume, lowering the gain, then bringing in more of the clean, and it just worked as like a really good like make gooder a pedal.
That's good.
It was a wicked unit. I mean, it sounded pretty good just going through like a torpedo reload with headphones. And once again, I hate trying stuff at shows. I'd much rather try it through my guitar and my rig. But I thought it was a wicked idea. I like the idea of having, you know, usually you think we see the clean blend or the parallel blend on all the compressors that come out now. But to see it on a drive was actually really nice without it sounding. I pictured it in my head of like having this really clear divide that some half of your signal would be really distorted and some half would be really clean and it would just sound super odd. But all it's doing, it's like, I guess like a second volume control. I think he was saying that if you turn the clean all the way down, so you're just getting the clean signal, it's basically running through a really high quality buffer. So it's just having like a wicked buffer at the front of your signal chain. And you turn up that control, you're bringing in more of the drive signal into that in line, basically. And it was great. I thought it sounded wicked. So, and there's some cool story behind the name, but I can't remember what that is. I think it's something to do with, because the design is like stars on the front. I think it was something to do with something they sent into space. Something to do with space.
A couple of other things that I know that we're sort of running up to time a little bit here, but a couple of other things that I was really enjoyed seeing there was there was a company who I hadn't heard of before from Stourbridge called James's Home of Tone, which was a kind of a little shop. But they were bringing in some very cool stuff. So some stuff that's kind of close to our heart was they had some of the ground control pedals. So they had the Amaterasu on display there, which was obviously one of our absolute favourite Make Gooderers. And more probably most excitingly was they actually had a Titan guitar. So Titan obviously being the kind of quote unquote budget version of the Cowher guitars. I don't think anybody is stocking Titan in the UK at the moment. And we had a very quick chat with James from James's Home of Tone. And he was saying that he brought in a couple just to sort of test the waters. And one sold basically immediately. And it looks like he's going to get some more coming in. So that would be really exciting. So if you're anywhere in the Stourbridge area, make sure you look up James's Home of Tone and see what's going on there, and do us a favor and buy that Titan so that we can get some more Titans in, and maybe hopefully Doug will come over and we can hang out with him. That'd be really cool.
That would be the best. I only heard of James's Home of Tone a while ago because they stock Millimetric guitars, which I'm very, very into. Did they have any of those on the stand at all?
I don't think they did.
I don't know.
No, wait. How do you spell it? I need to have a look at
what, Millimetric.
Oh yeah, I don't think they did have these actually.
So listener, to describe sort of Millimetric guitars, they are like the ultimate.
It's like
an art piece, but it's a sort of a mathematical art piece. They're very, very squared and sort of delicately shaped, and just everything. I have no idea how to describe these guitars.
It's really difficult.
Incredibly unique. People,
they do kind of look like a futurist art piece. It looks like
it's like Scandinavian furniture.
That's a really good way of putting it. Yeah.
Can we talk about quickly how much time have we got?
You've got time. You've got time. What do you want to talk about?
Two things. Go on, first then. Thing I want to talk about, and actually, in terms of new guitars, total highlight for me. I wish I had the money. I would have bought one hands down. Joe Doe guitars.
Yeah.
The guys that built the Pac-Man guitar that Mark Packham put up in the group that was on Reverb. Ben, right?
That's right,
Just absolutely guitar, I guess guitar art perfection.
Guitart.
They were just brilliant. They were just absolutely brilliant. So to describe... Because I don't think he's got a website, and he's like, "Look, I'm not.
He's on
my day job." Yeah, he's like,
"Who? Joe Doe Guitars? Does have a website.
Is
JoeDoeGuitars.com is Joe Doe Guitars' website? Yeah.
Okay. It's
very good. The front page lists all of the guitars that he does, and you can click on each one and go into and hear the story and understand the concept. Because we have spoken about them before on the podcast, but. That's the gist. Every single guitar, whilst it will probably be a Strat or a Telecaster in most cases, there is a complete story behind the guitar on an era or a theme, a motif that they're trying to get across. And it's fantastic.
I'll tell you what, though. They, until you actually see one in the flesh and see the detail in it, You just don't get it. They look cool, but until you see it, like, that's amazing. So the highlight for me, I think, was and you can see it on his website. It's called The Wall of Death. Go and have a look at it. He writes a custom story piece for everyone because I think he's a screenwriter.
Screenwriter.
And yeah, it's got this wicked story behind it. One humbucker with like a Teddy style top loaded bridge, but then like the back plate was like he'd found this old like PSA service manual for like the particular Wall of Death bikes they used to use in like the 60s, and then that's printed onto the back plate, and all of the binding is all like brass that's been like hand hammered around the edges and then like nailed in. It was just beautiful, and you know, all custom logos on. I think the whole thing is basically custom. He buys the necks in from All Parts, which he states on his website. Everything else is done by him. I think he had one that was like a model guitar. I can't think what it was called. It was like the model tank, the model kit, and the scratch plate's all like properly laser etched, so it looks like the parts of one of those plastic model kits you would have bought to like build a plane or a tank or something. And I was just like, I just thought they were brilliant, just as a cool guitar to own and definitely to play as well. But he doesn't take custom orders, and he only builds what he wants when he wants.
I thought it was really funny. He was just like, yeah, no, because we said like, oh, so what's the plan? Are you gonna start doing custom orders? He was like, no. I don't really want to have to deal with people, to be honest with you, because they'll keep asking me stuff, and I just want to make what I want to make. I thought that was fantastic, you know, because it really is. It's a hobby that he's doing this for, because he's, you know, he's got his day job and this is what he's doing for fun. And but you know, he made how many? I think he had 6 guitars at the show last year, and he sold them all except for his favorite one.
In stock this year, he's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. One that he wasn't selling. He said the other 5 had all sold. And previously, he's made 1, 2, 3, 4, another 6. And actually, I was just looking on his website, and this is brilliant. So all of them say, basically, I think apart from the in-stock ones, which he hasn't updated, say sold. So he's got like the Daredevil sold, the Dragcaster sold, and then the Wacker Waxter, which is the Pac-Man one, just says game over. I was just like, that's brilliant. And yeah, he made a good point. He's like, the problem is if I do a custom guitar, it's not what I want to build. And they're so unique that I couldn't really... It would be difficult to realise what a customer actually wants, I think. And
yeah, that makes sense. When you're doing like, something as unique and sort of, yeah, like yeah. Motif driven as this, it would be
so
difficult to...
I just said to him, I wish I had the money, because I would have definitely bought one. I just thought, as a guitar, it reminded me of what Fender Custom Shop were doing like 30 years ago.
Yeah, before Relics were...
Before Relics, before the Time Machine thing, but like cool, you know, like relatively not putting like a Playboy bunny on it or something. Do you know what I mean? Like something that was a bit this is really interesting, and actually you could go out and gig it, but at the same time, if you just wanted something to be on the wall, you could, but it would actually be a nice playing guitar. Which leads me on to the last thing that I really want to talk about. It's our last stop before we were on the way out the door. We said hello to the I think it's also Ben, right, at Crimson. And we were talking, I was saying, oh man, I've been looking at the guitar courses, and he's like, you guys have to come and do it. He's like, we're really like expanding how we're doing the courses. And
oh mate, the level of expansion that they're doing to accommodate the demand that they've got is incredible. I'm so happy.
They take on 6 month students.
3 months.
And they're like,
three.
Oh, right. So they take on these long term students, but they're like, once we've got those guys in, that's less space for someone to come and do like a week course. And he was like, you guys have to come down and do something. And I think it's something we really have to think about next year.
100%.
Is building a Crimson. So you can do a 6-day course. He said it works out to 54 hours. And he said you're basically guaranteed to walk away with a custom instrument that's finished to the same level standard that is one hanging on the wall. He's like, if you do a 5-day course, we get some people who don't quite finish it, but we provide everything, all the tools, all the parts. If you want to bring anything, you can.
Do you think I'll have to do a 12-day course to build a double neck?
Yeah. They just won't let you. It's just not allowed. Right. But I think that's something we should definitely consider next year. I reckon that would be, and there's something that actually I would love to do personally. I just think building a guitar would be just a wicked thing to have at the end of the day. Do you know what
I could make a Moog double neck, half bass, half guitar with a built-in Dimension C.
I think they'd give you all the time in the world for that, Joe, and you'd probably still never finish it. But
thanks, mate.
They probably wouldn't want you to finish it. But looking at their course prices, for anyone who's interested, CrimsonGuitars.com, obviously they've got a bunch of stuff, tutorials and everything on YouTube. Their 6-day guitar course comes out at $995, and I think to
which
walk
is
away with
less money than you'd pay for a Crimson.
Yeah, I think to walk away with a custom guitar at the end of that, I mean, it's just a deal, I think. Yeah. And yeah, to hang absolutely. Out with all those guys and
totally, that's the thing. Every time we're at a show, we get to see Ben and James, we get to hang out with those guys, and it's never for as long as we want it to be. And we just, I think it's really funny the first time that we met them was at the Birmingham show, which was what? The Birmingham show last year, so not this year. So we've only really known those guys for about 18 months, and we've probably spent in total like maybe an hour and a half hanging out with them in total. But just, you know, we were listening to their podcast, they're listening to our podcast and watching their videos and stuff. And I think we've just like become really good kind of mates through the internet. It's really, really weird. But yeah, every time we see them, we just have a really, really nice time hanging out. And I'd really like to at the very least, we need to get Ben on the podcast as soon as possible, you know, because
yeah, 100%.
It's just one of those things we keep saying, oh yeah, we'll do this. When are we going to do this? Let's work it out. And we just never do. So I'd love to hear, you know, I know his story a bit, but I think it's something that's worth telling, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, that draws us to a close of our London International Guitar Show special episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. We haven't even done the news, but fear not, we'll be continuing over on the Patreon episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast, where this week we're going to be talking about some of the gear that I saw on tour. We're also going to talk about a ton of cool new pedals that came out this week, and we're going to be talking about, if we have time, some of the coolest and weirdest pedals that you can buy at the moment. If you want to listen to the Patreon episode of the podcast, then, first of all, for $1 a month, you can get the regular episode ad-free and early, and $5 a month, you get an extra half an hour every week, plus access to the bonus features and mini-series such as Branton's Ranton. And $10 a month makes you one of our executive backers, granting you access to everything already mentioned, plus the prestigious honor of having your name read out in one breath by me. All right, I'm ready. Shall I go?
Yeah, do it, mate.
Adrian Day, Ethan Jebediah Bartier, Chen Sayers, Matthew King, Stephen John Rady, Golden G, Richard III, Marin Peters, Sean Arbo, Christopher Wolfman Chapperson, Robert Cousins, Rob Gruhl, Scott Hamilton, Tucker Everton, Ernie Cooper, Nate Nagel, Ross Edwards, Christopher Ratzek, Robbie Connor-Carrant, Matt Roberts, Dave Lee, Emery James Baker, Ryan McDermott, Juan Coya, Blake Wyland, Aaron Sherman, St. Gray, Matt Bellamy, Martin Cliff, Scott Kennedy, Christopher Loseth, Robert Smith, Hans Arms, Derek Rich, Chris Connors, Andy Joyce, Rob Nordwick, Steve Merkel, Mark Cross, Carlos Manta, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Blair Toms, Laurie Anstis, Paul Corrigan, Will Clare, Moon Garrett, Phil Colin Anderson.
Was that it? I guess it was Colin Anderson. Can't even draw out the Anderson.
Did anyone else get like a burst of volume halfway through that? Was it just me?
No, I think Joe somehow got like a burst of breath.
Okay.
And it got slightly more energetic, but yeah. I think that burst of breath probably actually did not fare you well towards the end.
Yes. It was close for me. That was a close one. But there you have it. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Guitar Nerds, or on YouTube at Guitar Nerds Videos. You can even visit our website, guitarnerds.net, where all our various channels are displayed in all of their glory. And you can even purchase Guitar Nerds merchandise and become a true member of the club. That is it from us for this week. We'll catch you next time for some more guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Cheers, gang.
Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.